to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. It's many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Pal to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
This is Dave Monk of Prairie Monk, WAFT Champaign 90.1. on your FM dial, and very generous engineer David Whitsunny is sick today, so I'm doing it by myself, which is okay, but not as efficient, and we have to fill in. I'm going to wing it because I had hoped to broadcast an interview with Wendy Garrison. But my technology is not quite there, so I think we'll leave that for next week, and I'll try and put a very interesting Grand Prairie Friends meeting on deck, and give you an idea of what was happening there. So this broadcast will go to different audiences, and let's first of all say that the Grand Prairie Friends had a 35th annual general meeting, and it was held at the Bruce M. Facility, which is a on the Barnhart family farm, just south of Race and east of Church in Savoy. It's on the banks of the Yankee Ridge Moraine, and it looks over the Ombra and the backside of the Pisota Moraine, which is occupied mainly by Savoy. It's a very interesting place to be, and the granddaughter has taken over the farm machinery shed and converted it into a rather wonderful restaurant with parking for quite a number of cars. And the Barnhart family has 100 acres of prairie there. And this was not a meeting where you actually, everyone was out on the prairie. This was a meeting indoors with field trips to the prairie if you wanted, and a field trip to a fire that would was musicians around it, and so a very nice atmosphere. It was from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, and people arrived and mingled and shared food and drinks, and a lot of people were meeting each other for the first time for a long time, and perhaps getting an idea of what the Grand Prairie Friends was about for the first time, even though they may have contributed financially or worked with the Grand Prairie Friends as volunteers or even been on the board. I would guess there were at least 300 people there. And that's quite impressive for an organization that is reasonably young. 35 years is not a lot, but it's been doing very well. They were at first advocates for Prairie, but then broadened their involvement to other natural areas within the state. It's referred to as the Grand Prairie Friends of Illinois, and so it can broaden into different domains. I think they've just got grant for working with cemeteries, for instance. They work with people, historical stories, and they work with the vegetation and endangered species like birds and I'm trying to think of the name of the little creatures, bats, and they have gotten a considerable grant for doing some of this. They have had donations of woodlots. One of the most interesting parts of what they do is in Warbler Woods, which is south of Charleston. It's in an area where there is a dam for water for Charleston area, and around it there's preservation areas, and between private and public people in that general area, there gets to be an area that's large enough for creatures, plants, and animals to breed and find a base. It's includes fingers of prairie that were used for agriculture, but can be restored as prairie. There's woodland that has been big growth in the past era when trees could grow in areas where there was drainage. Only the Onborough River provides drainage. Trees like water, but they don't like to have wet feet. So there also, since there is drainage, there have been invasive trees that often referred to as crud trees that that invade the real vegetation. So the Grand Prairie Ferns has been taking out those trees. Over the years, there have been a range of different people on the board. Jamie Ellis has been the board president for 19 years, but before that also involved with Students for Environmental Concern, and then morphed into Prairie as a member, and then as a member of the board, and then as president. They've evolved to the point where they have a CEO. It's almost essential to do so. The amount of work that goes with land acquisition and maintenance and innovation is huge. And so Sarah Livesey has been employed as the CEO, and she's active and interested and excited, and that is a great help to Grand Prairie Friends. They also have an employee, Jeff Payton, who is the Natural Areas Manager. And so two employees so far. They now have over 1,000 acres of combined prairie and forest. And that's no small deal. You have to know that in Illinois, 80% of the preservation that goes on is with private companies, private people. It's not happening at the state level. So most of our preservation is dependent on these sorts of people. And they have a nine-member board and a treasurer, and a lot of that information was shown on a slide with a huge projection screen, and but also associated with a probably a 10-page annual report, and it's more or less a 35-year annual report at a special time. And various people, often with a passion for doing natural history preservation work, spoke liberally and told people what they were doing, and that's very important, and that brochure is welcome and helpful. Let me run through some of the things that you might be aware of. They own 1,061 acres. They manage 1,145 acres, because other agencies get the Grand Prairie Friends to manage their properties. That's especially related to things like burns, where you need a certain amount of skill and pizzazz to be burning a prairie. And so Grand Prairie Friends has that pizzazz and can provide that service. There's a lot of camaraderie, a lot of volunteerism. When the Grand Prairie Friends called for volunteers to plant trees in the Coles County area, they got over 100 volunteers. I think it was more like 125. And that means that the community is aware of what they're doing and why. And they have had some challenges there, which also calls for management and CEO. The CEO is a titular head of the organization, running at the request of the board and within the cooperation of the board. And so when the deer population, which is rather large and over generous, it involved trees being eaten by deers, and so now they have arranged for hunters to come in and take out deer and control that population, which is really too much. And what happens is, as harvest has gotten to be more effective, the gathering of corn and soybeans that's left over in the field is getting less, and sometimes those deer become emaciated and starving, and then they take on disease and ticks and things like that. So it's rather unhealthy to have a imbalanced ecology, and so they are having people to come in and sort that out. It's volunteer probably to start with, but volunteers with arrows and then with rifles don't always remove very many deer, and so you need professional people to come in. There's also the fact that you don't just leave volunteers to come in and help and be frustrated because they don't know quite what to do. So there's a need for leaders in the community to be around and do their work. Let me stop for a moment. Do you need to go? I don't want to. Okay. Well, I'm being assisted here by William, and he needs to go, so I need to let him go. We're working at this, and letting you know some of the things that Grand Prix Friends is involved. There's a plant sale where each year perhaps 5,000 prairie plants are sold to people. They are also into pollinators, which is slightly different from prairie restoration. Pollinators often include prairie plants that grow quickly so that you have instant gratification, and also they include some cultivars. So we're very jealous about the remnant prairies that are pure, and we are careful, and so as Grand Prairie Friends, not to put pollinators into prairie restoration areas or prairie preservation areas. Have a rattlesnake master run for the prairie. I think this year was the 15th or more that's been run by the Grand Prairie Friends, and that brings in support money, but it also allows them to give awards that are prairie-oriented, so people that come get more than just a run and an award for succeeding. They get to encounter prairie, and the run is in Meadowbrook Park, and that runs through a reconstructed prairie. Some of the plants there were early on were mainly grasses, so the prairies are not just grasses. There are big areas of grasses. Grasses grow well. Grasses wave their wooden leg in the wind and look wonderful when there's a wind that rattles across the prairie. But the more interesting part of a prairie is the broadleaves, about 100 broadleaf species. If you have 10,000 acres, you would have the possibility of having 100 species. But if you're on a railroad line that cuts through the prairie, you might only have 50 or even less than that. So Grand Prairie Friends is very aware of that. They have seasonal interns that have for years been working with Grand Prairie Friends, and some of those people have not only gained experience with prairie and prairie species, but they've gone on to get jobs which are related. And sometimes volunteers become professionals. They get bitten by the bug and stay and work with organizations, not necessarily the Grand Prairie Friends. It might be with Douglas Hart Nature Center or other centers that have the same sympathy. So Grand Prairie Friends is more or less a trust, and it attends meetings of the Prairie State Conservation Coalition. It's an organization that works at the state level to improve relationships between the public and the preservationists and the state. Some of the problems involve taxation, and if you have a natural area Do you get a tax break for doing that? And what are the laws behind it? So people like Fran Hardy and others created the Prairie State Conservation Coalition, and so Grand Prairie Friends attends that sort of meeting, and that gives them a broader involvement. They have physical plant and often donations at Warbler Woods. They have a big shed for storage of equipment and things like that. And often those are donations. It might be a tractor or a vehicle, and also donations of land where the family decides that the piece of land could be a natural area, and it may even be better for it to be in a natural area that's managed and announced and interpreted. And so then Grand Prairie Friends becomes a facilitator. Some of the events I've mentioned, but sometimes you need a steward. So there are funds at the state and federal level to support stewards. You may want to be a docent and belong to both the Grand Prairie Friends and the Natural Areas Study Group, for instance. At Meadowbrook Park, Audubon did a lot of the collecting to make the prairie there more biodiverse early on. It was easier to grow grasses, and that gives instant reward because they grow quickly. But to infuse the legumes and the other broadleaf plants is very helpful. So some of the plantings at Meadowbrook Park have been encouraged by this sort of organization. They have to fundraise. You can't do a lot of things like buy fire equipment, zoot suits, without money to do it. If you have to have a go-kart that carts enough water to protect a telecommunication booth or a power tower, you need the go-kart that will do that and take a hose and allow an area to be watered and protected. That go-kart has to fit onto a vehicle, so there has to be a trailer to go with that. There's also quite a lot of communication. You have people that have regular meetings and an ability to communicate there, but you also have people-to-people communicating with themselves. They become stewards and work with that. They have to do long-range planning. Some of these things don't just happen on their own. For instance, the whole of the Warbler Woods is a plan to bring together enough land for creatures to be able to survive. And so there's planning there. It may be a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan, but you need planning. And you also need to facilitate the people that come. They enjoy to eat food. They enjoy to explore. They enjoy to nurture, to make a home for creature here and there. They enjoy to photograph. They enjoy to put up towers for bats. And they enjoy the physicality of this. You actually to walk a mile in a natural area is good for your health. and you're also stimulating your mind to know some of the species. Even if you start out with just big bluestem and a few of the grasses, you will shortly be with children, and if they ask you 10 times what that plant is, you're likely to be finding out what that plant is and being able to tell the next group. I'm not sure how many members they have, but it was obvious that yesterday at least 200 people registered for that meeting, and there were a whole bunch of others that came. They have a wish list for things that they would like to see you do. First of all, your time and your talent. If you have a background in the Natural History Survey, then it's very helpful that you be there. Mary Kay Selecki is retired from the speciality of working with preservation of corridors statewide, but especially within this region. She's retired now, but her contribution to the Grand Prairie Friends is very helpful. She can lead field trips. She can know the plants. And there's a need for comfort. Sometimes volunteers will provide for porta potties. There are a need for trail cameras. They find out that when they put a trail camera on a certain site that looks like it's only used by deer, it ends up being used by all manner of creatures. This becomes a highway. So they're looking for more trail cameras. They need electric chainsaws and even power motorized chainsaws too. When you're taking out things like autumn olives, there's a lot of branches, and it's dangerous to work with heavy chainsaws, and this so a light electric chainsaw can be very helpful. So you usually know what the invasive creatures are. One of them is teasel, one of them is autumn olive. They're the two major ones. Honeysuckle is another. And volunteers have removed those trees and brought back what we can estimate as what was here early on. There are people who give gift cards, and that encourages people to support certain industries, but it is also has some background feedback to the Grand Prairie Friends. Your membership helps, and it's modest, but it allows things to happen. And there's a list of organizations that have helped. One that's rather local and very interested is the Lumpkin Foundation, the Illinois Clean Energy Foundation, the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois, Cargill's. These are people who have and continue to donate. There's volunteer stewards have put money into this. Minuteman Press, which may have had to do with this brochure that I'm reading from. There's a feeling that more is better. And so we may have a meeting with 300 people, but in 5 years' time, couldn't that be 600 people? Can it be more than that? Can it morph into other states? How does it work with the Nature Conservancy, which is also another supporter? So there is ambition to have growth. If you have growth, you also need supporters. And so part of the whole effort yesterday was to encourage people to take an envelope and provide some funding, and they have a Leatris group that is encouraged to donate more than $1,000 a time, and they become part of a close association of people who are regular supporters. So regularity is something that you expect. Regularity is helpful if you can make sure that you're going to donate a certain amount each year. That is helpful. And it can be anticipated that there will be a certain amount of money. You don't always survive. Locally, the Isaac Walton League that did a lot of natural history preservation work and interpretation work and took children out in outings and things like that and provided a little house in Lake of the Woods and grew older and didn't have membership. And so it has become defunct. So you have to be sure that you do support, because it's not axiomatic that you survive. One thing that happened this week on Friday was a visit to the Shortline Brewery. And Wendy Garrison was invited to come from Mississippi, where she is living and working now. And so there was a few of us that went to that line. It was the first purchase that really helped to create the Grand Prairie Friends. And we walked the corridor and noticed the species, even though it's in fall and even though there's snow there, there's a, you can tell a monada, you can tell a yellow coneflower or a big blue stem, and there's a corridor between two section roads. It's 1 mile. It was acquired when the railroads, the airlines, and other organizations at the federal level were being deregulated, so railroad lines could curtail their services. So this one became available, and it was a reasonable amount of prairie there. It's not the world's greatest. It's a thin strip through a land that was all prairie at one stage. And the state has managed to preserve 0.01% of the prairie that was here, two-thirds of the state. And Champaign County, for instance, was 94% prairie. So mainly prairie. So your heritage is prairie. And this is a little sample of it. And people enjoy it. Corridor is maintained partly by Jeff, who is an employee who takes out crud trees. But there's also a gentleman who lives nearby who mows the corridor. And that makes it possible to drive through the area. Not the public, but workers can take in a pickup truck if necessary. There are several ways of doing this. The ballast that is on the corridor is gravel, and gradually over the years, it can be allowed to take back prairie so that it's a habitat that's more dry, so drier species find their way there. So not always do we mow railroad right-of-ways, but in this case, it allows people to visit, it allows people to walk through and see the vegetation on either side. Wendy Garrison and her husband bought this site and helped to create the Grand Prairie Friends. And so she was enjoying walking. After they bought the line, there was a group of a few of them that would remove endangered species or picnic there, or and they had a picnic table. And they had to consider whether they were going to have also a garbage can. If you had a garbage can, who was going to empty it? So at every stage, you have to think about what you're doing with the prairie. Are you going to plant plants in it? Does this become a prairie garden? Or is it a remnant prairie that you don't disturb it? And you try to use it to give an idea of what a prairie was like. So that was a fun walk. After the crowd had gone, I stayed to photograph the prairie, because I had a lot to do with it early on. And the person who mows it wanted to thank Grand Prairie Friends, probably Jeff, for a key to the gates on either end. And he brings his dogs. The dogs were wonderful. They were having a riotous time with each other, teasing each other and running off and chasing each other. Back and forth along the corridor as I talked to the gentleman. The gentleman had been working for Illinois Central, which owned the line, and he used to repair equipment that was used to maintain spikes or tighten bolts that would join a stick rail. And so his father used to be, father or grandfather perhaps, used to be a fireman on the steam engines that would go through on this line. Before the line closed out, it was called the Pumpkin Vine. The train didn't go through Pontiac and into Indiana. It stopped at Pontiac. Potomac, I think. It's the other side of Armstrong. And there the train would take alternatives. It would go from Champaign to or Rantoul or wherever to I think it's Potomac. And they had a turnaround there so that the engine could be turned around and come back with the engine in front. That would pick up grain from small elevators. I can remember a hugely small elevator at Armstrong. You could almost put your arms around it, but it was a wooden elevator, and that's where you would collect grain. It would go to from Rantoul to Leroy, which was the other end of the line, on an alternate day. And I don't know, I assume they had a turntable there. It was interesting, these turntables didn't have electricity in the early days, so you had to have a turntable which you could put around. And just talking to this gentleman, his name is Harold King, and Harold King Jr., because his father was senior. And you get to know people, and even this story about the dogs is interesting, because one belongs to one farm building and one belongs to another farm building, but it's obvious these two dogs enjoy each other's company. And just talking about your dogs is a friendly conversation. So that was a starter to Wendy's looking at some of the things that Grand Prairie Friends is doing, and she is still tied up with Grand Prairie Friends, even though she has met her husband here. Her husband got a job in Mississippi, and so they went there and they do conservation work there. And Wendy gradually went from doing a bachelor's degree to a PhD and taught at the university there. Gradually, this atmosphere creates people who have options that they might not have had otherwise. So, bully to Grand Prairie Friends for what they do and what they will do in the next 35 years. Jamie is retiring from being the president, and so we wait to find out who might be the new president. Jamie is a local. He came from the Peoria area, and his parents were there, and they had to be proud of his involvement, and other relatives were there too, including the Barnhart family. And let's take a look at the site where you were. The Barnhart family was basically a farm family, and but they are near enough to the university that they're also academics. Both mother and father were academics, and father was a counselor at Monticello. Mother was teaching and involved in Eastern Illinois University. Have children, Todd and Amanda and Brett and Gainey. I think Brett was the last. And just a bunch of children that have grown up also as academics. And one of the members of the family, Donald, came to us at one stage. He was doing a summer high school thing, and the teacher was had a doctorate in biology, and they came to a little prairie that we had working with Route 45. Route 45 went from a two-lane highway to a three-lane highway and then to a five-lane highway. So Donald was at probably age 10 or 11 at that stage. And many years later, he came to me and said, we have the chance to do a set-aside. And the Barnhart family farm is on the slopes off the Yankee Ridge Moraine, just south of Urbana. And the water in glaciated times would run into the Ombra and leave town and eventually run into the Wabash. Donald was really interested in father putting in a prairie as set aside. It was allowable. You had the slope, and the agricultural people were wanting to support people who would protect slopey areas where there would be erosion. So, and prairie can do that. So my role in life there was to talk to Harry, who's the father, and to convince him that we could do some prairie preservation. And Harry was agreeable. We got seed from the Wade family in Oregon, which is a family that was committed to prairie. Doug taught at the Northwestern, I think it is, University. And Doug and Dot had a backyard full of prairie biodiversity. So we bought seed from there, and Donald selected an acre and a half in a circle on the ridge and tilled it slightly. It had been agriculture, and the seed was planted by distribution, just by hand distribution. And I don't think it was put into a drill, because most drills that farmers have are not suitable for planting prairie. Oh, I remember we did have a drill. It came from Decatur. They had a drill that planted cedar. So I think it was a mixture of drilling and seeding by broadcast. We planted around the edge evening primrose, because evening primrose grows quickly and makes a statement, and then Harry could see where not to mow or not to disturb the prairie. It required quite a lot of patience, because prairie doesn't grow quickly unless you just select the quickly growing ones, which are something like Indian grass can grow within the season. But most of the broadleaves don't come quickly, and this is a rather biodiverse little prairie. So it's grown over the years. It's probably 30 years old now. Donald got hold of the farm tractor and came down to the highway and salvaged cordgrass and other species. So he had rows of plants that were specific, so that you'd know that they were there. I also planted plots of ground that were harvestable by combine. And Harry got into the act enough that he was modifying the drum that of the harvest equipment so it would be able to harvest species like big blue stem, Indian grass, little blue stem. But they also had broadleaves. And broadleaves are not quite so cooperative. They spread their seed across the season sometimes, so you can't do quite so much mechanically, but it's there. Then they did get... Donald was looking for 400 acres of prairie. It hasn't ended up as 400 acres, but it's 100 acres. And the soil and water conservation people have gotten into it, and it's a... And now 100 acres with a parking lot and a road that doesn't meet Vine Street, so you end up in the Barnhart family farm. There's a little dog leg so that the entrance to the corridor is not directly opposite the street. There's a farmhouse which is occupied by the family that is doing this. They've gone through all the Zoning Board of Appeals and quite supportive by groups, but there's all sorts of rules. And they have a restaurant that can take up to 300 cars. And it will be used for special events. They've cleaned out the big barn that was... We call it a tin barn. It's not an old type barn. They had two barns that they were sort of obsolete and they were taken down. And the barn used to house harvest equipment, planting equipment, plowing equipment. And there was sort of a workshop in the other end, and people were invited in to do metalwork, and the family was very helpful to invite others. Some people came and picked seed. Some people lived on the site, perhaps with a trailer house. Donald himself, being a scientist, got a PhD in holography, so he teaches and researches in holography, but he had a little studio out the back, which it was a holography studio. And there was a pet goat. It would follow people around like a pet dog. And so the Barnhart family is interesting, and they've put together this restaurant, which will be available for special events like weddings. They have already had a wedding there. They've had a funeral there with the spreading of the ashes at that site. And when the full moon is out and you can look across the landscape late at night, it's a haunting place to be. And there are other members of the family that have cooperative land, and so it's not just 100 acres, it's 100 acres and relatives and friends in the neighborhood on Yankee Ridge, which is kind of rolling. Let me see. I have 10 minutes left. I perhaps would take the opportunity to say where some of the initiation of Grand Prairie Friends came from. When I came here in 1961, I was looking for the heritage biology of the area, which I assumed was prairie. I couldn't really find any, not easily, and not a lot of people seemed to know where the heritage prairie was. So I got involved, and several of us got together and created a natural area study, Natural Areas Instructional Resources. And we would encourage interpretation and work with varying departments within the university, utilizing contingency money. And it's like a revolving account. And we worked not only with the university and university students, like Students for Environmental Concern and their spin-off, the Red Bison. We worked with probably best part of 20 departments. Sometimes someone will want you to come and be a devil's advocate for a class, or they would want one slide, and some classes would want a series or a talk or an exhibit. So that went on for quite some time. There was a grant proposal opportunity, and very shortly Natural Areas Instructional Development, that had been working with botany and zoology and landscape architecture and planning and geography, and the grant proposal said, your research is excellent, your teaching is good, but where is your extension? And so I had people in my office that changed the name to Educational Resources in Environmental Science, and that proposal was put in. It didn't succeed, but possibly because it didn't look like there was an established environmental extension. People were becoming aware of the need for environmental studies. So that was another group, Ben Ewing and Environmental Studies, and the Office of Instructional Resources and Curriculum Lab. These were groups that were supportive of what we were doing, gave us space and helped us, and gave us an audience too. And so Wendy Garrison, who was invited to the Grand Prairie Friends Conference, was a board member of ERES. It was a long-winded name, and we haven't publicized it a lot, but it's a mother company for a lot of things that we do. And it's often inspirational because educational resources in environmental science is broad. We moved a Greek Revival cottage to a park on University Avenue. It's used as the headquarters of the park district now. A lot of things were beyond just prairie, but so that's when we decided to spin off a group, which became the Grand Prairie Friends. And we had a long debate with Bob Dodd, who was a previous mayor of Champaign, but a lawyer. And he felt that as someone who by this time knew something about prairie, rough and tough, if it may be, but I should be on that board. And I didn't want to be on that board because I felt like we were trying to spin off a group of advocates for Prairie where there were no advocates. And we wanted them to develop their own interests, and they have done so. They have morphed into Forest a little, which to some of us was a bit disappointing, because we were wanting advocates of Prairie. It's easier to hug a tree. It's easier to do some of these things. And there's a lot of luck associated with it. And they're doing very well, but we still have in the background that they're the Grand Prairie Friends, and that's their advocate. And they are advocates and do it well, but we keep just an eye on them to see that the prairie is right there. It is hard to preserve. It looks like weeds, and we want something a little... a recognition, and they provide that. We have not had a lot to do with what the Grand Prairie Friends has done, and that was almost purposefully because they do it better. We had a rattlesnake monster run for the prairie, which we ran for 7 years, but then that went to Grand Prairie Friends. It may be that some of our railroad beds in the long distance could be part of the Grand Prairie Friends. We're not speaking for them, but we look longingly for in perpetuity of some of those areas. We, as the railroads would being deregulated and retired, we bought a 33 mile of railroad bed, and that became Heartland Pathways, a much easier to understand organization, but it has trails, a nice 2 mile trail across the Sangamon River on one of our truss bridges. We have 3 truss bridges and 27 trestles, and in the long run, you hope that this will go also into preservation. Not easy. You have a challenge between gathering land and maintaining land. So the 7 ring counties in Chicago have voted to gather land before it's lost, even though they haven't necessarily developed all the land that they already have. So there's this debate. We are working with the Champaign, Havana, and Western Railroad. It's a spin-off from the Railroad Museum to some extent. And we're hoping to get historic trains into Champaign. And that will take a long time. So we're broader, and it's very helpful to have spin-off groups like the Champaign, Havana, and Western Railroad. It might take years to work with, but they have to go through this process of developing a group of people that are interested and working with them. Yeah. We instituted a Reading the Landscape class, which Wendy Garrison was also involved with, and that's sort of morphed into a master naturalist and a master gardener. And we can't take credit for that, but there are people who've been to one and included the other, and there is that sort of understanding that there needed to be some initiation somewhere. And so ERES has been an initiate in many different ways, whether it be a Greek Revival cottage or a railroad restoration. The problem we have with our 33 miles, it was before the federal government decided to save some of these railroad corridors by giving money to recreators and